The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 27th of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Liam Harrington, Chief Business Officer at Iconic Labs, ICON, the sticker there. And Liam discusses the management contract with Joe Media Ireland and the ambition he has for the company. Also on the podcast, Joe Solomon, Managing Director of Oilex, provides an update on their West Kampar interest in Indonesia and also the Indian Cambay gas field. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Catenay Innovation, Destiny Pharma, and Stagecoach. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you visit voxmarkets.co.uk, you can see top 10 versions of both those lists and plenty of content. If you go there, you can see lots of blog posts, video content, podcast content. There's a video there on Expedia on the right, London Midday Report, the UK Market Report. There's also a blog article on Mastrano and Immu Pharma and Dev Clever. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Plus, you'll see our COVID-19 index, stocks that could do well over this period. Top riser today is 4D Pharma, up 18% on that index. Biggest faller is Fusion Antibodies, down 9%. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Liam Harrington, Chief Business Officer at Iconic Labs, ICON. Liam, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We've had John on, and I started speaking to you, and I thought, you were John. And it turns out you and John are related, aren't you?
John and I are related. We're cousins, but perhaps you might get a few more laughs out of me.
Yeah, okay. No, because I genuinely thought, wow, you sound very similar. So, Liam, John's been on the podcast quite a few times. Yes. You haven't been on for a while there. But for people not familiar with Iconic Labs, just summarise what you're all about, please.
So, Iconic Labs is a new media and technology company that focuses on the growth and development within the digital landscape. We've got a keen focus within sort of the publishing world and creating, you know, building a transition or the bridge between, you know, old school media and new school media. So for things like intellectual property and creating new ways of engaging with audiences.
Yeah, and you come with a bit of a track record. Let me explain that if you could.
Well, so I was the founder of a publisher, a digital publisher called Unilad, which ended up being, you know, the biggest digital publisher for video views and engagements in the world. So it's a nice record to have, but kind of keen to emulate that now within a new business too.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's huge, and obviously you think that's doable, that's repeatable. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting landscape, the digital landscape at the moment. You know, there's so many media companies out there now that there is kind of a playbook to follow in order to create the success of one. We've seen it multiple times within our industry of companies trying and failing. But I think with the new news that we've released in the last couple of weeks, we're kind of happy that we're now in management of Joe Media, so we're super, super excited.
Yeah, well, I read this. Let's talk about this, because I read this when it first came out. I thought, wow, that's quite impressive, that contract. So explain, first of all, what you'd be doing. Explain what Joe Media is and this management contract, if you could.
Well, so Joe Media is a publishing house, and their expertise are within formats, creating video, and again, very similar to the Unilad model. It's all about the engaging audiences and, you know, digging into specific niches that appeal to people. For example, you know, one of Joe's top niches is sport. So Joe are very, very well known for sport, and they're very well known for politics. Mm. So they're well respected in those areas. And they create content and distribute it to their audience, and then again receive the engagements and video views and everything that you need to say, listen, we're doing well here. So they have an audience, and we're absolutely, you know, delighted to be managing them now, which we've, you know, so we've taken over the whole management process of Joe. So that goes from everything from the running of the business to all the way through to the commercials and how they earn money.
Yeah. And I noticed here that, like you said, they're earning at the moment, Joe Media, the business, already generated about $10 million in revenue per year. But how much will you get for managing?
So, yeah, so, I mean, their numbers at the moment and what they've done are absolutely incredible. I mean, they are brilliant numbers for a media business the size of that they are. So we'll be taking £50,000 a month from that, and then also receiving 25% of the profits, dependent on particular targets that we hit.
Yeah, and I like that because there's not just a flat service fee, you know, because like I said, Joe Media could go stratospheric even more. And you won't see the upside, but now you will see the upside of that 25%. And is that the kind of way you're going to structure most deals if you can?
100%. I think it's always important to have that incentive. And first, it's very important to know what you've got in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. So like I said, this is a media business, which is familiar territory for us. And we know where the company's gone wrong. We know where they can get better. And then we know what can kind of take them into the stratosphere. So again, familiar territory for us, we have the playbook and we're ready to kind of hit the ground running. And it's very important for us to have that incentive in there so that we can take all the kind of the low hanging fruit, make the changes that we want to make, start adding in new revenue streams, and then we will really see the upside. And the upside is there. So if they're doing these huge numbers of, you know, £10 million a year, you know, we are really looking to push this business hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you say that it's, you know, it's significant to you, and it will enable Iconic Labs to become operationally profitable within 3 months.
So if we look into the Joe business again, with the revenue streams that we will be able to add in, there were certain things that they weren't doing or kind of turned off within their business. Mm. Once we turn them on, then we will become profitable.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And, which is obviously very exciting.
Yeah. And so at the moment, I mean, Trump is, you know, more than anything, you know, the media is very fickle there, and you can have like a company being top of the ratings 1 week, and then all of a sudden a month later, they almost nowhere near or don't exist. So is this an issue? Do you know how to keep refreshing? How to keep the audiences coming back? I mean, at the moment, your sites you're managing or the ones you own, how are they doing? How do you keep refreshing this kind of content? You know,
it's all about the content you create and the speed that you're creating the content. We use this word trending a lot in our industry. Mm. And you're right that the media industry is fickle. And what you have to do is you have to always be agile and able to, you know, keep on top of trending news and trending content. As soon as you've got trending news and trending content and you're able to distribute it fast, again, another key word is speed, then that means you'll always be able to stay on top of others. You'll always be able to stay fresh and you'll always be able to stay current. So again, in our game and what we do and what we're going to be doing with Joe and all the other publishers, there should be no reason to see any drop off within you know, the content landscape, as it were, because we'll be remaining on top of things when it comes to that, for sure.
Yeah. And other parts of business at the moment, how they're looking? Can you explain? You know, I've seen some figures, like you say, you've talked about some very impressive increases in some of the traction on some of your sites there. What do they mean? Can you explain that, please?
So I think one of the key ones that I'd just perhaps like to focus on is, you know, when we talk about page views. So a page view is the equivalent of a reader, you know, someone picking up the newspaper and reading an article. So all the publishers that we have are, it's very important that we keep the page views high. So we may have, you know, we may have on the London Economic, for example, we may have 3 million page views per month. Mm-hmm. So that means 3 million people have picked up a newspaper. If I bring it to the real world, 3 million people have picked up a newspaper and they've read an article within that newspaper. Now, the way we generate money from that is that person who picks up the newspaper may see an advert on that page. Mm-hmm. It's the same goes for a website. You open up an article and you may see an advert on that page. And there is a fee attributed to the person reading that that particular article and the advert. Yeah. So every person that we get reading is a little bit of money coming in. Mm-hmm. So I'm always keen to make sure people realize that when we go and release news suggesting that we've had an increase in traffic, it usually does have a cost attributed to it. And it does mean that we can say, well, there's been an increase in revenue as well. Mm-hmm. And I think this is super important to know, because it makes you as a shareholder feel more invested into the company. It gives you a narrative that you can actually follow, and you can actually see the growth and development of these businesses. But it's very important to understand actually where the money is coming from. So it's nice to be able to simplify it, but the paid view model is as easy as saying it's someone picking up a newspaper and reading an article with an advert in it and knowing that they're being paid for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so take us through then. At the moment, you know, I assume, are you happy with the direction in which you're going? And take us through where you hope to be, where that direction is, and where you hope to be, say, in about 12 months' time, hopefully.
I mean, I'm absolutely delighted. I'm incredibly excited with the management contract of Joe. I would call them an anchor brand for the company. Mm-hmm. They are a very, very big brand to be associated with, and I can foresee within the next 12 months of having a lot more opportunities, and in particular with myself and my job role within Iconic Labs is obviously going out and seeking these opportunities. I see us being able to attract a lot of new business, having got the anchor of Joe, the Joe name under our belt. Yeah. Now, again, coming out of this, COVID-19, the media and digital landscape is fascinating at the moment. There are new digital companies who unfortunately are struggling and will be struggling. Usually we find a trend within these companies that they're so excited to grow and they're so excited to build, which is completely fair and fine within the business. We've all been there. However, unlike traditional media and an old school publication, new digital companies do not have enough runway to be able to survive if anything kind of bad happens, i.e. COVID-19. So we are going to see within the next few months a lot of opportunities coming out of the woodwork, which I'd like to, I'd like to then converse with the people who are in control of these companies and see if there's anything that Iconic Labs can do. And there will be many of them. There already have been many of them.
Yeah.
So the next 12 months are going to be incredibly busy, but there is going to be a huge build going on here. And I'm hoping over time that, shareholders and everyone will start seeing this picture being built, this product being built. And we'll just keep releasing as much news as possible to make sure everyone can see that.
Yeah. And so in your wildest dreams and ambitions then, Liam, where do you see Iconic Labs, in say 5 years' time, for example? Where would you like to be if you haven't sold someone or someone? Where would you like to be?
Are we allowed to compare stocks here?
it's an ambition, isn't it? It's a dream, so everyone has those. So it's up to you.
Listen, I've always had a lot of respect for Future PLC.
Yeah.
Their model is fantastic. Mm. And it is definitely one that we are kind of on the right trajectory for. They are a fantastic model, and I'd love to be in the position that they're in.
Yeah. Well, listen, I've had someone else mention those as well. So they're obviously doing the right thing, and they're setting out the model they're following is obviously working, and it's repeatable, isn't it? So
it's repeatable. We have a very similar model. Mm. The only benefit I'd say to probably us, and again, we are new and they're not, but the difference is, probably the team that we have here, because they have been and they are so on the ground with the new digital media companies, we can have the conversations much earlier than those guys can.
We
have access. We have sort of unprecedented access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's very, very helpful for a stock like ours.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not kind of treading water. We are really kind of proactive here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, every day on the podcast, Liam, I highlight the top five most followed companies. and that knows what's trending at the moment, I suppose. But to get on that list, someone has to hit that follow button on your page. So give them three reasons why someone should hit that follow button and add Iconic Lag to their website, please. To their watch list, sorry.
Well, I think the business model that we're creating is a fantastic model that will thrive coming out the back of this pandemic. Again, I'm not too sure how much detail I can go into these three points, but I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, we're not going through a credit crunch here. When it comes to advertisers who we rely upon, it's not that they haven't got the money to spend; it's just they've been holding it back. Mm-hmm. So if you've been able to survive through COVID, and then you can go and have these conversations with the advertisers, you will be able to release the big, big budgets that we can now kind of put towards the likes of Joe Media. Mm-hmm. The other things we do have a proven track record within the digital space of building something absolutely massive and very exciting. And crucially, again, something which has a story that people can follow, and that's always fun. And then thirdly is the opportunities that we have in front of us, and that I personally have access to, are things that I'm really, really looking forward to unlocking, as it were, with Iconic Labs. I'm raring to go with all the conversations that I can have. It feels like you've got a new lease of life, actually, in you. It's great. It's fantastic. I'm so excited.
Excellent stuff, Liam. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Solomon, Managing Director of OEX. OEX is ticker there. Joe, thanks for joining me.
Nice to be with you, Justin.
Yeah, likewise. And you've released an RNS, an update on West Campan, and we'll discuss that in a bit. But as always, Joe, you have been on for a while. So for people not familiar with OEX, just explain what the company's about, please.
Yeah, we're a small company involved in the oil and gas sector, exploration, appraisal and production. We're dual listed in the ASX and on AIM. Our main project is in India. We've recently sold some projects in Australia, but we have interests looking at other parts of the world also. We have our feet on some interesting projects in the UK. And today we're going to be talking about Indonesia.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like this is West Campan, PSC in Indonesia. This is the RNS of the day. Quite unexpected. Can you provide us with some background information, please, on this, Joe?
Yeah, look, people will be very interested in this because it hasn't been the subject of our announcements and RNSs. The project has a long history for OEX going back as far as 2007. Mm-hmm. At that time, OEX farmed into a large area in Sumatra, in Indonesia, in a very well-known, very productive oil and gas basin. Mm-hmm. The project had a known but undeveloped oil discovery in it, and OEX farmed in for a 45% interest in the project and contributed to the drilling of a confirmatory oil well that eventually went on production. And also the company at that time had a second farm-in arrangement where it would take its interest from 45% to 60%. But as it happened, about that time, the company started to notice some irregularities in the joint venture. Mm-hmm. And it's a very long story. The short story is that this resulted in a default notice being sent to the operator and an arbitration court case being taken out by OEX in Singapore. It was successfully, the arbitrational tribunal was successful for OEX. It was awarded return of monies, which hadn't been paid to it. The arbitration was subsequently recognised by the Indonesian courts, but getting enforcement of the tribunal's award proved to be very difficult in Indonesia. Mm. The operator then got into difficulties. It ended up being declared bankrupt, and the result was that the PSC was withdrawn by the government of Indonesia. OEX continued to press its case with the government, but we didn't really make many announcements about that. It appeared in our quarterlies and our annual reports, but it's taken some time for us, and now the government is looking to return the project back to OEX. In the process, we've been helped by a very experienced Indonesian group and some associates here in Perth. They will take a 50% interest in the project when we get it back, and they'll continue to work with us to get the project back on its feet. Our partners have really been instrumental in helping us to regain access to the project.
And what will the return of that, you know, of West Kampa project back to Oilex then mean for you, Joe?
Well, the project was on production from a field called Pendalian. Oilex did not receive any money from the production, but it produced over 700,000 barrels in its life. And there are a number of wells. There are five producing levels at depths that are easily accessible. So the initial approach will be to go back into the old production wells and bring them on back onto production. They haven't been producing for a number of years. This will require some evaluation work and some workovers in the field. But the data indicates to us that we could restore production levels to around 400 barrels of oil a day. We see infield drilling opportunities where we could go back in and drill new production wells. And one of the really interesting things is there's a 3D seismic data set which was acquired but has never been used to site new wells. So we would need to access this 3D seismic data set, which requires a payment of a fee to the people who acquired it. Oilex was actually involved in the setting up of that original acquisition program. The oil from the field is good quality. It's very little gas. It's easily sellable. We also believe that there's exploration potential in a very large area that's attached to it. It requires further evaluation work. And again, our local partners are very experienced in operating in Indonesia, and it offers us the opportunity for maximising return and field efficiencies. Mm-hmm. So we're really looking forward to this thing coming back to us.
Yeah, absolutely. But your main project is the Indian Cambay gas field. Can you just give us an update on what's happening there, please, Joe?
Yeah, Cambay... indeed, it does remain front and centre for us. It's true to say that COVID has had an effect on the progress with this. Our shareholders know very well about this project and how long we have been working on it. COVID's affected many projects in India. In fact, many projects and companies in our sector across the world have been affected. Many projects have been put on hold. More and more companies have gone into administration. So the story is not a good one for our industry. And in fact, to put it another way, that we believe that without COVID, it's very likely that the transition stage for our partner, Indian company GSPC, to exit the project would have been completed or near completion by this time without COVID. India has been and continues to be badly hit by COVID. There are frequent lockdowns in many parts of the country. Staff are not able to attend their offices. Where we work in Gujarat State has been a hotspot for COVID. And, you know, this has severely impacted progress on our project. But to summarise, nothing has changed with the intent of GSPC being replaced by a new party. We continue to work towards that goal to free our project up and get back into the field and drill new wells. And the government of India continues to support us on this journey. In the meantime, we know the delays are not what our shareholders want. We've reduced our cost base enormously. All of our staff have contributed to the cost savings. We continue to work towards restoring production at Cambay, which was shut in last year. Look, we know our shareholders have been inordinately patient through this process, and we thank them for that. Our sights, we want to make really clear, our sights, as always, are set on returning value to our shareholders, and a large part of that, the major part of that, is through our Cambay project in India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, Joe, well, listen, if someone's listening, likes to sound the prospects you have here but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Yeah, look, many, many people know the underlying potential value that's in the country's asset base, primarily in India, and as we discussed, but for COVID, we'd be much further down the track. So that's the basic underlying formula for our for OilX is the value of the Indian project. The new announcement today is about going back into Indonesia. We see additional potential in Sumatra, and West Kampar could be a stepping stone for us into that. Third reason, look, we've just added value to the company from the sale of our Australian project. That will come, will play itself out over the next 12 months or more. We continue to have opportunities in the UK, and like all investors, we're working to see a turnaround in the company and indeed the oil and gas sector's future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Joe, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al?
Good morning, Justin. I'm feeling slightly lethargic. It's just the, lockdown. Well, it's not lockdown anymore, is it? But it's just this ongoing dirge, I guess. We're sort of getting
boring,
out of
boring, isn't it? COVID is boring now, coronavirus. Why doesn't the virus boring. Know this? It's boring us all. Just get away. Yes. Go.
Yes, you've wreaked havoc. Now just go, because you're boring the rest of us. No, that's a.
And do you know what's annoying me? The British government, right? They've made. I don't know why we expected a decent policy here, on the travel policy, because all the way along they've messed up. The only sort of, I suppose, light, shining light is the economic support they've given businesses and stuff from Rishi Sunak. The rest of it has been absolute shambolic mess. I mean, we had like seven deaths when they claimed this was a pandemic, and the World Health Organization claimed it was a pandemic, and they were behind the curve. We all knew it was a pandemic, but they said they were a month later. It's now officially a pandemic. We all knew that.
Yeah,
now, if we shut our borders, then we had seven deaths in the UK. That's all we had. We had less than 2,500 cases. That's all. But they didn't do that. They didn't shut them at all. Then we had daily flights in from Wuhan, the hotspot of the pandemic, flying into the UK,
Yep,
and we didn't do that. And now all of a sudden, they put a blanket ban on Spain. Well, hang on, all of Spain is not a problem. And then you've got the Balearics and the Canaries, which have way, way, way fewer instances of coronavirus in the UK. And they've lumped them in with it as well. Why? That's ridiculous. It's insane thought. And it's shambolic from the government again. The whole thing is now is that they're trying to promote we can lock down local hotspots in this country. Do the same in Spain. If you've been holidaying in Catalonia or wherever it is the incidence is high, you have to quarantine. If you've been in Tenerife or Mallorca, which the incidence are low, you don't have to. So it's turning travel chaos again. These travel companies as well, I'm not just going with the corporate guys, it's just people have to get away from holidays, of course. But the corporate guys, they don't know where they are. It's like, oh my word. They're already, eyeball deep in debt anyway, pretty much. And the government are just piling it on, the misery. And they haven't got a clue. They've tried to be decisive here. We're going to act quickly on this, because they haven't acted quickly all the way along when it's counted. And now they pretend to be ahead of the curve. They're way behind the curve. And be honest, putting in policy that will have no effect whatsoever. It's pointless, apart from hurting people or sectors that are already hurting. It's really bad,
It's not even policy, just they're just reacting to events rather than shaping events. And I think this has been the frustration all the way through. They're just reacting to a perceived increase in threat. And the thing is, this virus is cropping up all over the world. We're trying to buy time now between developing drugs that will help treat the most most chronic cases. The dimethasone is one treatment that's used for it's an old drug used for treating chronic conditions, been around since the 50s, and that has been proven to reduce the incidence of death in chronic cases by up to 33%. They've got all these drugs available, so we've just now got to buy time. And I think this reactive process, where companies are gearing back up to start flying people, start moving people, start providing holidays, and then to shut it down again, is absolutely absurd. I think most people now would say, okay, I'm happy to go, given that the potential treatments are advancing, given that testing methods are now out there, we can be tested. So you test people before they get on flight, test people when they come back. And basically rolled it out that way. It's just this knee-jerk reaction, stop, start. It's the worst thing you can do. So,
we should now be get to the stage where we are really targeted and are looking at, like I said, you know, those areas that are highly infected, fair enough. You know, those people either have to quarantine, which is quite extreme as well, or because, yeah, you know, when you go on holidays, I assume now most places abroad are already... They have, you know, they've taken levels of precaution where you're not eating from sheds or buffets, you're not standing next to people, you're not, you know... most people are social distance, social distance now, everywhere abroad, especially Spain. And so even if you quarantine people from Catalonia, that's quite a blanket sort of, effect. But, I mean, you could have targeted testing, you know, if you're feeling ill or whatever, or you cough, or if there's any symptoms shown, or testing for people in that area. And then you can really be targeted, and it would affect... We have that to get the economy going, we have to get to that stage where we just target hotspots and clamp down on it and quarantine people like that and self-isolate. But you can't just an entire country where the majority of the country, you know, there's no level, high levels of contagion there. It's just ridiculous. This government is doing my head in. I voted for Boris. I'm thinking, God, do you know what?
Yeah, I know. It's annoying me. But look at the alternative at the time, though. That's the problem, the alternative at the time.
More importantly, Al, I'm going to miss a holiday in Tenerife.
I know, mate.
That's the most important thing. I just want to get out. I've got cabin fever.
Yeah, well, my holiday on the bikes has already gone out the window this year. So my daughter's getting married, and it's just completely scuppered wedding plans. The wedding venue, we've now pushed it on to next year. They're having a wedding here, and now, you know, knowing the way Boris reacts to things, he may well say, okay, we're going to ban gatherings of more than sort of 10 or 15 people, and you know, it's just a nightmare. You just can't plan ahead. It's absolute crap. It really is.
Anyway, let's get to the stocks because we won't have much time. We've got 15 minutes. We've got three stocks. We've got 5 minutes each, Al. Go for it.
Okay, right. Firstly, Cat and Eye Innovation, CTEA. This has been well discussed and well documented over the past 6 months. They've had a phenomenal year considering where the company were. They develop blockchain-based products that provide immutable record-keeping services, which can be applied to storing of documents, to that they have a sports-orientated app called OnSide, which has been sold and used by a number of football clubs, Southend, Charlton Athletic, Aston Villa, and so on. They have OnSite, which is used by insurance companies, the Fardel, Guardian use them, for instance, to log records of fire doors in buildings. But the company has advanced dramatically this year on the back of utilizing its technology and adapting its technology to develop an app to identify, so people can be identified as to whether they have ever tested positive for COVID or not. The app is called COVID, COV/ID, and this is a joint venture that's been developed with ZDN Group. And during the year, the company's undergone a transition in management. Some new investors came in, a new board. Brian Thompson came in, who is the majority shareholder. He's well known in the insurance sector and the technology sector, based in Newcastle. John Farthing came as a CFO, and Guy Meyer, who's been running the company since the departure the last year of the previous CEO, has now been installed as permanent CEO, which I think is great news. I mean, Guy's done a great job guiding the company so far this year. Clearly, very little revenue to speak about at this juncture, although the company just generates nominal revenues from its contracts. But there's been a series of developments this year. The company confirmed a little earlier on that its COVID app had been completed, tested, and was now ready for rollout, and also announced a joint venture with Afric ID, which is a Botswana company owned by the former Botswana ambassador to the USA, Canada, and the Caribbean, to roll the COVID app out through Afric ID across the Southern African continent. Basically, there's a potential market there of 346 million people. Absolutely huge market to go after. So this is the first step down the road in developing the COVID app. Now, the share price, anyone that's followed this, anyone that's invested in this, it's given investors a pretty exciting ride. It's been up and down all over the place, already hit a year high of 9p so far, and that's coming off a year low of 0.01p, so you get some idea of the movement. Currently trading at 4.5p, and there's, you know, by the time the day's out, it could well be back over 5p or over 6p. It's been trading and moving up and down quite considerably, but nonetheless, the company are expected to start announcing that they've converted some of the potential into commercial contracts, and that is expected in the not too distant future. And I think when it does, and we get some idea of the revenues involved, it could deliver exponential growth for the company. Certainly, I've seen Guy Meyer interviewed here and there, and he's very confident about the future of the company this year. And also, I think the fact that the new investors have come in and the new shareholders come in is highly significant too. So very exciting year for the company so far, and no doubt plenty more excitement to come.
Essentially what you're saying, all hype, no revenue at the moment, yeah?
No. There's a lot more substance to it. I mean, it's already been tested. The company ran a test with the app with the a healthcare group in Newcastle. Testing went very successfully. In fact, it delivered over and above expectations. So on the back of that, they're now rolling the app out across the UK. So we expect to hear news on commercials very shortly. So yeah.
Yeah, but until we get that, it's pretty much all hype, no revenue. There's no revenue yet, is there? You can say rolling out commercial contracts. But that's the ultimate judge. The proof in the pudding is the revenue generation, the commercialization of a company. Listen, you can either get in early and ride the hype cycle, which is happening at the moment with Cat and I. There's a nice rise at the moment. But when it has to start generating proper revenue, that's when we see the proof of the pudding. And generally, it'll fall off as we see the hype cycle goes up. If you look at the hype cycle chart, goes up quickly, very aggressively, then rolls over, comes back down into commercialization phase, and then takes a long, steady growth upwards. So if you missed out on the first wave, you know, there may be some more hype around, but if they're going to start to commercialize this, you'll probably see it taking longer than you know, they expect. They always talk, tech companies always talk a good game, but when it comes to actually commercializing, it takes longer than they expect. Always.
That's very true. There are a lot of apps around as well, and the government, of course, have been trialling a number of apps to just test their efficacy in regard to delivering an effective back-to-work scheme to identify people and identify whether or not they've been tested positive or they've carried the virus at some point. And of course, that there are plenty more out there. But this is blockchain-based. Don't forget, the CTO of the company is Alan Simpson. He's the guy that founded the iPlayer. He's a huge brain in the industry, and also Professor Michael Mainelli as well. If you Google him, he's basically on the team developing this. So there are some major figures in the technology industry behind this. And it is at the moment. It's very much hype, but they are delivering nominal revenues, as I said earlier. And I think once we get news of the first contracts, we're going to see exponential growth in this company.
Well, you say a lot of thinks there. See, again, you've been doing
it.
I think. It's like I've been watching Shark Tank, you know, and on Netflix, which is better than Dragon's Den. But and it happens on Dragon's Den as well, when the founders of these inventions or ideas come in, and they said, no, I truly believe this could be massive. Well, I said, don't ever say that, because everyone who walks through those doors with an idea, of course they believe in it.
Yeah.
They wouldn't walk through the door otherwise. You know, if you didn't believe in it, you wouldn't stand in front of, you know, investors pitching it to them. So saying I believe it'll go somewhere is completely irrelevant. I hope that's the case, you know, anyway, for everyone who has some skin in the game, you know. Otherwise, we wouldn't bother going forward with it. But, I mean, the proof is in the revenue generation and the commercial adoption of it. Anyway, Al, you've spent 6 minutes on that stock. Now you've got 4 minutes. Well, you've got 9 minutes left on the next two.
Okay, Destiny Pharma, next one, DEST. So this is a pharmaceutical company, actually quite a refreshing change because there's no COVID element with this. Or the only
that's why the share price is at all-time low. It's like I was talking about the weekend podcast with the guy saying, listen, don't CEOs know by now? Just release an RNS with COVID-19 in the title. And then it'll you know, generally, you see RNSs with that in the title has a 50% better chance of, the share price rises on stocks by about 50% more than those without that in the title. So use COVID-19 in the title if you can, anyway whatsoever. Doesn't matter how, you know, tenuous it is, it'll work. It'll do better than an RNS with no COVID in the title.
Okay, absolutely right, but the fact is that they have a very practical solution for dealing with hospital superbugs going forward. And of course, given that people are on average,
why haven't they mentioned that in the RNS? Is there? That's a massive. They should mention that. That's COVID related. You know, they should mention that, shouldn't they?
Well. The only COVID mention has been the fact that COVID has delayed the phase 2B trial that's undergoing at the moment. Just a very quick overview. Company is worth currently 14 million. Traded size 67p on the year, as low as 29p. Currently at 22p, up slightly this morning.
I've got 30 pence. What are they at? Destiny's Farm, DEST, 30 pence they're at, aren't they?
Okay, well, I'm looking at 32p on
32p. My... Oh, I thought it was a 22p. Sorry, I thought it was a 22p.
Yeah, no.
You said 22p, Al.
I said 32p. I'm looking at the screen that says 32p. Yeah, so
you can listen to the podcast afterwards. You said 22 pence.
Okay, so the drug is XF73, which is an MRSA. It fights the MRSA superbug. And the company is in R&D phase. They have 7.5 million cash in the bank. Over the years so far, they have been featured in a Tests in Microbiology Oxford article, which praises the efficacy of XF73, which shows a no or low resistance profile when used to kill dangerous bacteria. They've been awarded a National Biofilms Innovation Centre grant to fund research collaboration with XF73 with Cardiff University, and also this year was the launch of the AMR, that is the Antimicrobial Resistance Action Fund, which is funded by over 20 leading pharma companies who pledged over $1 billion to help drug candidates, and XF73 is one of the candidates right at the front of the queue. So on the back of that, despite the fact that COVID has delayed testing, they're undertaking a phase 2B clinical study, which they are evaluating XF73, which is delivered as a nasal gel to prevent post-surgical infections like MRSA and others. And the chief exec, Neil Clark, this is news out today, the chief exec, Neil Clark, said that XF73 is now providing them with a significant commercial opportunity, and this lead clinical asset is a novel way of dealing with serious hospital infections. So, understated as ever from Destiny Pharma, but this is going to be a huge problem further down the road, particularly if we do get a second wave of COVID and people are in hospital. And of course, not only do you have the COVID issue, you have the issue of superbugs to fight as well. So once this is over the line, it could be absolutely huge with a massive global application, enormous marketplace to go for.
Yeah, so it's the prevention of post-surgical hospital infections caused by Staphylococcus aureus bacteria.
Yeah, which is MRSA. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Well, such as it's one of the things. Yeah, it's, but Why do they still go with Latin or Greek or whatever that is? Staphylococcus aureus, isn't it, those? Staphylococcus. Yeah, I think it is. Anyway, cool. Well, you got 4 minutes. Last one now. What's the last one?
Okay. This is probably a counterintuitive idea. But looking at trading ideas and opportunities for growth, Stagecoach, the transport company, clearly Stagecoach buses are well known, very clearly indeed. Crystal clearly. The company reported preliminary results last week, and obviously revenues fell because of COVID and because of not the shutdown, but the reduction in use of its services. But the company is in good shape financially. Obviously, it runs the bus fleet. It runs coach and tram operations. It's taken over Virgin Rail. The company is in good shape financially. It's got a substantial war chest of liquidity with over $800 million of undrawn committed bank facilities and cash. The company also said that regional bus trends were improving pre-COVID, but I think the key with Stagecoach is that it is massively invested into being a carbon neutral company. It's invested in new tech. It's invested into green buses. Obviously, trains are green anyway because they're electric. On the back of this, the company's been shortlisted to bid for bus contracts in Dubai and Sweden, it has set out a roadmap for sustainability to take the company to be a zero carbon business. Now, on the back of this, it's getting a lot of help from the government, and the fact that Stagecoach are pushing and pioneering this will, I believe, mean going forward that it'll probably be shortlisted in tendering for any new contracts. But added to this, the company said, or the CEO Matthew Griffiths said, that the business was on track to meet its expectations for the full year. This was an idea that was picked out by at Atlantic Capital Markets last week, and they're actually backing the shares to turn the corner. Shares are currently trading at multi-year lows at 47p. On the back of this, they think that the company could well turn the corner quarter four this year. Added to this, given the strength in the financial position, Stagecoach have also said that their ambition to resume dividend payments in due course as well. So that's quite something for a company that, if you looked at it on the face of it, you might think, well, I wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. But actually, they're in good financial shape, and they are receiving strong support from government, both at national and local level.
Yeah. I don't know about the investment case, but I do like the first line of Martin Griffiths, the CEO. First line there.
Yeah, Matthew Griffiths.
So that's a proper name, that. Yeah, Martin Griffiths. You don't mess around there, do you? Martin Griffiths. He said, "We have achieved a credible set of financial results in what has been one of the most challenging and sober periods for citizens, communities and economies across the globe in living memory."
Yeah.
True. Very true.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, So it is a good line, and I think I just think that this isn't a company that you might sort of that would spring to mind immediately as an investment proposition. But I think if you look at that set of results, look at where the company are, look at their strong cash position. That's key, because we know with transport companies, that there are so many stories in the past of rail companies just operating at a massive loss. The costs are huge, but they've actually structured the company well, and also they've got this big push for zero carbon, and I think this could be a surprise recovery play. And clearly it's a speculative buy, but look where the shares are.
Ding, time up, Al.
Multi-year lows. Anyway, there you go.
SGC. Yeah, marvellous. On your coach, Stagecoach, and
Stagecoach.
We'll speak you next week, Al. Thanks very much.
Okay, I'll gallop off into the sunset.
Beer topped.
Yeah.
The marble cigarette in his mouth. Right, cheers, Al. Thanks, Al.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. It's Meagre Diagnostics, up 6%, 62 pence. At four, it's Supply at Me Capital. That's up 15%, 0.075. At three, ECR Minerals up 23%, the 2.35 pence. Of course, the gold price is flying. At 2, Novacyt did an update today, and that's 292. They're up 5%, pretty much to 292. And at 1, Clearstar. I did a video on those on the weekend, and 7 reasons why I invested. And that's up 9% to 36.5. CLSU ticker there. Just do a video search if you want to on that. Justin Waite, Clearstar. It should come up on YouTube. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Immunopharma, FDA submission for special protocol assessment. At 4, IQAI Limited, update IB stroke. At 3, Tertiary Minerals, Mount Tobin project update. At 2, it is Hurricane Energy, Lancaster EPS update. And at 1, Cora Gold Limited, new discovery at San Ancora Gold Project. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.